Well, hello there. The mailman is in the building.
Rain, sleet, or snow, he made it. Hogan, Rodman, you want some? Bash at the Beach, come get some. Because you will feel the...
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Hello and welcome to Free Association. Hey, J.D., did you see what I did there? I added the hello in front of welcome.
That was pretty good.
Thanks, man. I'm working on it. Anyways, I'm Dave Zarum, SportsNet's NBA editor. He's J.D. Bunkus. Producer at the Fan 590.
Happy because his Seahawks stole a win last night. Me and Dwayne Casey, Seahawks. We have plenty to talk about me and Coach.
Casey loves the Seahawks. Good friends with Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
Not you, Casey.
Oh, well. I like to consider myself a close friend of Pete Carroll, too.
One day, man. Keep dreaming. But listen, we got a good one for you today. Coming up on the show, we're going to decipher what we learned from the Raptors' two preseason games.
First
two thus far. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think our work here is done for the rest of the season.
We're ready to make our proclamations on everything Raptors.
But hey, basketball is actually happening, and we are going to talk about it. We're also going to go to league-wide and ask some burning questions ahead of the 2015-2016 NBA season, which is really just around the corner. What, like 2 weeks away now?
Man, it's getting so close. How come Rodgers doesn't put up the countdown clock for basketball season? That's what I want to know. What's going on?
Oh, man.
Like,
JD, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Rick Brace, give me a shout. Oh, like, somebody let me know what's going on there. It's 21 days till World Series is what it is. Like, that's a little presumptuous. I'm not going to lie. Like, that's a curse. That's on you, Sportsnet, if the Jays don't make it. That's on you.
Just to fill you guys in, there's countdown clocks all over this building. We're at the Rodgers headquarters right now. There's always countdown clocks to different sports dates. The NBA season, not on the countdown clocks yet, but...
Someday.
I know Rick Brace is listening to this show, and I'm pretty sure he'll heed your call, so look out for that. But listen, also as a bonus, and I'm pretty excited about this, we have a special guest, Diamond Dallas Page. That's right, DDP. He's going to be calling in later to take a trip down memory lane. A little random, you might point out, which it is.
But there is a basketball
connection.
This is
a fun one. Diamond Dallas Page, the old wrestler from the 90s. We spoke to him about, I don't know if you remember this, Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman at one point in their primes dropped basketball.
Prime of primes.
They were both in their primes. They dropped basketball and they became pro wrestlers for a couple months or a month or at least one match.
A match.
Anyways, we're gonna find out the real inside story behind that with Diamond Dallas Page later on. But for now, let's get to this season. Let's get to the Raptors. Let's talk preseason, and we'll do that right after this.
Hi, DeMar DeRozan, Toronto Raptors, and you're listening to Free Association.
This is for Association. JD, man, you've watched the first two Raptors preseason games.
Like I said, I'm ready to. I'm set. All my opinions about this team are set. Monday's game
against the Golden State Warriors. Not broadcast in Canada unless you have the sports pack.
Yep.
Not so thrilled about that.
By the way, I totally thought yesterday was Tuesday. Like, until like midnight last night. I was like, oh my God, it's now Tuesday.
It was Tuesday.
It was a really shocking revelation for me. It was a tough one. That was rough. I don't know. I don't know if that happens to people or if like I have like a brain, if I should like get a CAT scan or something. But like I was like convinced, like dead set that it was Tuesday.
If it makes you feel any better, JD, I rarely know what day of the week.
Okay, that's good. That does make me feel a little bit better. But you don't like really work, so it doesn't really count. Like every time I go to your desk to see you, you're never there. And everyone else from Sportsnet Magazine is always there. It's not like it's an empty place. It's just you that's not there. You're the only one. I don't know how you... Kajiggered that deal?
And
is that a word?
And we're moving on. So last night, the Toronto Raptors on Monday night lost to the Golden State Warriors.
They won Sunday, though.
They won Sunday in Vancouver. That was a lot more fun to watch. Not that I watched the Mondays. I didn't realize it was even televised, like I said.
Yeah, I was able to catch most of the first game.
Good. Okay, well, fill me in, because you saw the Warriors game, so, as well. Fill me in on what happened.
So Warriors ends up being just a quick Norman Powell dominating in the fourth and Damari Carroll doing it in the first. Say two. That's it.
I guess it's comforting. Kyle Lowry did not play on Monday night with a groin injury. I don't think it's any reason for concern. I think it was just precautionary. You know, Casey said that he probably shouldn't have played on Sunday just to get him some rest. But, you know, when you look at the loss against Golden State, a lot of it probably had to do with having Lowry out. Or, you know, it being preseason and...
And not really anybody
not really
caring.
Mattering, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably numero uno. I think the first game was a little bit more telling, though. Like, I think there was some nuggets from the first game that...
Such as?
Well, the first thing is that, and I guess I'll combine it too, but like, Norman Powell looks like an NBA player, no?
Yeah, he's really solid. And also, like, if you just talk to him, he's got a real good sense of kind of where he is in his career so far and what he needs to do to make it work. I really have high hopes for that guy this season. Like, I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing with Norman Powell.
But does he start the year in the D-League for sure?
No, I think I really think he'll start the season with the Toronto Raptors. I think they can use what he brings defensively. I think they can use him at that two-guard spot. He's going to see a lot of time in the D-League this season, but I think you look at the way he's been performing in the preseason. I know he had a strong training camp. It might be enough to let him crack the roster. You don't
I just
it?
Wonder, like, shaking well, your head. No, so I actually think that he deserves a spot. I just wonder, like I said, if it's more beneficial for him to log a bunch of minutes and really work on his offense rather than becoming garbage time, because he's going to be behind, obviously, Kyle. He's obviously going to be behind Corey Joseph, and those two guys are going to log a ton of minutes. Then DeMar is going to log a ton of minutes, and then, I mean, I know they're going to play T-Ross at the three, at least part of it, but I think he still is a more natural two, right? Like, I think that's where I'd like to see him the most, as the secondary scoring option coming off the bench. So I just see, like, to keep Powell as the fifth guard, that just seems like a bit of a waste.
Yeah, like, I could see them doing it in the way where they kind of give him a taste, let him see what traveling around the NBA is like for a road trip or two, and then send him to the D-League to get that kind of, like you're talking about, those minutes and that seasoning. But, you know, it really is beneficial for those guys to just see what it's like to be around that environment. And Powell, one of the more kind of forgotten or underrated things about the Raptors rookies this year, both of them, Norman Powell and DeLon Wright, is that they're both four-year players.
No, yeah, they both look like they have a really good feel for the game.
That's really, really rare, especially these days, to have a four-year rookie, let alone two.
Yeah.
So these guys are like, they're grown men. They're like 22 years old. You know, they're adults.
And Powell's a freaking athlete, man. Holy.
Yeah, he's really good. I think DeLon Wright's going to be really good as well.
Yeah, we both like him. And, like, we can't say this enough, but we both just love having the D-League team here.
Yeah, it's really going to help. I mean, we'll talk about Bruno in a second, but it's going to be just so crucial for that guy. And you know, Powell as well, DeLon Wright as well. But the thing is, like, yes, they're adults and they're four-year guys, but it's still a whole different animal when you're in the NBA. I mean, Powell in training camp was talking about that, how, you know, it was an eye-opening experience for him. So he's gonna need time to get used to that kind of his new reality. So I think that's going to happen a little bit in the NBA.
You've got a ridiculously long piece coming up about Bruno.
Yeah, Sportsnet Magazine. You guys got to check out the next issue is our Raptors preview. Michael Grange has a great piece on Corey Joseph. I've got a feature profile on Damari Carroll. I'm really excited about that. And then, yeah, a big read on Bruno Caboclo and kind of the work that's gone into developing this guy over the last 2 years, really. I mean, since they found him, and basically what a team does when you're put in a position where you have this extremely talented, extremely raw prospect, how a team goes about getting that guy NBA ready. It's been a lot of fun to report. I can't wait till it's out. It's going to be a good.
Yeah,
one.
I'm excited. So let me in on little snippets of it, which I love. There's some things I can't say, but I just want to so bad.
Well,
so bad.
You've signed the papers, so.
I did.
It's your future. But, you know, we did see a lot of Bruno in the first preseason game, especially. I think he played 15 minutes on Monday against Golden State, but in Vancouver against the Clippers, we saw him a lot. Which, you know, that the preseason is the time for that. You know, he needs to get reps. They need to see what he's about. And that's not going to happen during the course of the NBA season. It is going to happen in the D League, like you mentioned. But, you know, the interesting thing I thought about watching Bruno play the Clippers so much is that, you know, this summer, the last two summers, actually, Bruno's played the Clippers runs, like pickup games out in L.A. So he's playing with Griffin. He's playing with Paul. He's playing on the same team as DeAndre Jordan, Paul Pierce, all those guys. For 2 years now, he's been playing with them, and they really know him well. So I think that was one of the reasons why we saw so much of him in Vancouver against the Clippers, because that's a really comfortable matchup for him. Like, he knows those guys. They know who he is, not just on the court, but off it as well. So, you know, it made a lot of sense to see him there. Any other takeaways from the preseason, JD?
Well, I'll just say this quickly on Bruno. And, like, again, you know, I've almost become, like, the Bruno basher. Like, that's almost, like, my, like, calling card now is that, like,
a lot of fans react really short-term in what they see right now in front of them. And he's obviously not ready to be an NBA player, but no one has the delusions that he is. Except it's hard for fans to buy into that. So I don't think you're alone in
sure. I will say this, though, that some of the things that you see from the guy, and I hate to say it, but it is mostly his physical assets, make you wonder what if. And you can understand an organization like the Raptors taking a flyer on a guy when he's that type of athletic freak. The only thing I saw is that from that one preseason game, and again, you can't overread into this, but it's just that his defense is so far away. He's so, so, so far away on that end. It's going to take a lot of seasoning for that guy. And yeah.
Well, there's nobody in the Raptors organization right. who is.
But yeah, you said it.
Who is like nothing unexpected is happening right now with Bruno right. Caboclo. Everything is going according to the exact plan that they laid out for this guy. It's a long, long term thing.
You said it before we started the show, yeah. which was that the most accurate thing that might have ever been said about him is that he was 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. so I think that patience kind of needs to be there. But
I mean, this has been said before and it'll be said again, but you know, drafting Bruno when they did was almost insurance, knowing that if they were to wait 2 years and have him enter the draft in, let's say, 2017, he wouldn't be there at number 25 or yep. 21 or wherever he
right.
was picked.
So yeah, we'll continue to be patient. My other quick takeaways is one is that I was a little worried about Kyle Lowry with all the weight loss that he wasn't going to, like, I mean, this is a
still
kind
worried?
Of a ridiculous
still
take.
Still worried?
No.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was.
That's what I'm saying is that, but you have to understand, right? Like, I thought that a lot of what defined Kyle Lowry is his body, right? Like, he's a big dude that was able to kind of go and take contact in the lane. I was a little worried that maybe he wasn't going to be the same guy. And no, he is. He looks great. I'm really happy about him. And the other thing is that I don't think that the power forward spot is as sealed up as I once thought it was. I think Luis Scola definitely.
Hey, we talked about it on this show here. I mean, that starting spot is his for the taking.
Yeah.
You know, if he continues that preseason like that.
That's, I mean, he looks good. He's 35 years old. He does not look it. He had his moments. He got that one ball in transition, went and finished it on the other end against Clippers. And I was like, ooh, that doesn't look like a 35 year old's legs.
He's a great, you know, he's a great example of a guy who knows exactly like who he is.
Yeah. And I think that benefits a Raptors team that, you know, is still searching for an identity and hopefully a defensive identity going forward. But yeah, no, you can't read too much into the preseason.
Also, can't talk about what we've seen so far without touching on JV. Involved really early on in the first game in Vancouver.
Yeah, loved that.
That's no accident. That's not a coincidence. I mean, I think we're going to see a bigger effort to get him involved in the offense.
He looks more assured. Like, he looks more certain. I know it's, again, preseason, but he looks more certain of himself shooting that little mid-range shot when he gets it open. I think that he's going, you've said it before, this has been your take all along, is that we're going to see JV shoot the ball a lot more this season mm-hmm. from 10, 12 feet.
Well, and also when we had Dan Toldsman on, you know, yeah. assistant GM last year, he said that was a goal for them as well. So,
last thing I'll say, Vancouver basketball.
I'm glad you brought this up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a great, I mean, it looked like a great crowd.
Great crowd.
Yeah.
Preseason.
And you hear everyone, all the players and coaches talk about it afterwards. They were really impressed by what the crowd brought. I mean, it begs the question, will it ever happen? You know, Casey was interviewed after the game and he said that, you know, there needs to be teams in Seattle and Vancouver.
And I'm so glad that he brought that up. Actually, Matt Devlin really endeared himself to me when he was like, Seattle needs a team first and then Vancouver. I was like, you're goddamn right, Matt Devlin. That was the right call. Seattle needs a team first. Then other things came.
Oh, here we go.
No, we don't need this.
We got JD started on his Seattle Supersonics.
Are we really going to go 10 years without basketball in Seattle? That's really going to happen?
Yep. Oh. Looks like it.
Devastating.
But no, yeah, both seem like great basketball season. I mean, Vancouver failed for a lot of reasons, but not because the fans weren't into the game, you know?
No, I mean, I think it could work there. I don't think it's a priority market, though.
No,
I don't think it's like Seattle. And the only thing I will say, though, is that I remember listening to Bill Simmons interview David Stern, and David Stern said his biggest regret was having basketball fail in Vancouver. So if that's ever something Adam Stern wants to pick up the legacy of or make amends
Adam
for.
Adam Silver, then, yeah.
What'd I say?
Adam Stern.
Oh, well, maybe.
Adam Stern's Daniel Stern's younger brother.
There could be an Adam Stern. He could be coming up. Let's not rule him out. I'm not counting you out, Adam Stern. There's still time, bro.
All right. Well, there's also still plenty of time to talk about the rest of the NBA as we approach the season. We got some burning questions to burn through.
So if you haven't checked it out yet on sportsnet.ca, they had a roundtable. They had some burning questions. I was left out, felt a little bitter, called up Dave Zarum, said, let me get a crack at this. Let me take a couple of swings. Let me take a couple of hacks. You're going to get those hacks. I'm going to hack it up. You're going to hear some hacks. Oh, boy. I am a hack. I'm being told.
All right. Well, let's hack away.
It's so hot in here. So freaking hot. I'm burning up. I got burning questions. I got one burning desire.
What, to break down the NBA season?
You know it. Oh, you know it. I want it. Let me have it. Give me the questions.
All right, let's get right into it. So, like JD mentioned, these are burning questions from Sportsnet.ca's NBA Roundtable. I've answered some of these. I haven't answered all of them. JD's answered none of them, so very eager to find out his take on the upcoming season.
And I'm curious to know why you omitted some answers. I guess that's what you get when you're the NBA editor. Hey, you're just like, nah, I don't want to do that one. Nah.
Yeah, it's been covered.
That's good. I'm good on that one now.
All right, first question up here. Which team from last year's playoffs is going to miss the cut this season? Now, this one, there was a consensus on Sportsnet.ca. Not a total consensus, mind you, but a majority.
I'm in the majority.
Really?
The so Portland majority. It's gonna
be, oh, okay. Well, because the majority was the Brooklyn Nets. Oh,
okay. Well, then I'm in the minority.
That's what you meant. And that's why we didn't ask you to join in.
Maybe I should have glossed over that article a little bit more before just getting outraged and calling you up.
But no, so most people on that roundtable, and it was Craig Battle, Evan Rosser, Donovan Bennett, myself, Steve Long, said that the Brooklyn Nets are going to miss the playoffs after making it next season.
Remember, this is the team that's most likely to miss the playoffs.
Yes.
So you guys were locking in, not you.
No. I clearly think that Portland is the team that's not going to make it this time.
And I am clearly with you.
Okay, good.
I don't see how. Okay, this is my argument for why it's so obviously Portland over Brooklyn. I'm so much more sure of what the Western Conference is than what the Eastern Conference is.
Yeah.
Like, let's go down the list of teams in the East that you think are for sure making the playoffs this year. Cavs, Bulls, Wizards, Hawks, Raptors, Heat, Bucks. Then after that, like, there's opportunity.
On the flip side, the Nets are terrible.
The Nets are terrible.
Have you seen that roster?
Yeah, but okay, here's the thing. The Nets still have Joe Johnson. The Nets still have Brook Lopez, who if he stays healthy is going to be good for a bunch of wins. They're a team that I like a lot more than a bunch of other teams in the East.
Well, here's the thing with Portland. The reason why the answer is
by
Portland,
a bunch, I mean
the reason
few.
Why Portland is going to be the team left out of the playoffs this time around of those teams who made it last time around is that they lost their whole team. They just got Damian Lillard, and that's it. I mean, seriously, they lost LaMarcus Aldridge, Wes Matthews, and Nick Batum. I mean, that's their nucleus.
Yeah, no, they're in serious trouble.
And they replaced it with, I wrote in the thing, hold on, let me look it up. They replaced those guys with Mason Plumlee, Ed Davis, and Gerald Henderson. Which, no offense to
and
those
they,
guys.
They also scooped up Noah Vonleh.
That's a major downgrade. And Vonleh, who's a total question mark because we don't know what. So far, he's proven that he's not NBA ready. But
so I think CJ McCollum is good.
McCollum's going to have minutes and he'll play well, but that's not going to. That doesn't make up for losing the other three.
I think getting Plumlee for the price they paid was pretty good.
Yeah, no,
like
I like
they had
that,
a
like
decent offseason in terms of like grabbing a couple of maybe pieces. Like Vonleh has a lot of upside still. I liked them grabbing Connaughton in the draft. through a trade.
Listen,
nonetheless,
some nice pieces there and whatnot, but nothing close enough to say that this is going to be a playoff.
No, and the West is just such. It's so tough.
It's going to be hard for Damian Lillard this year. If he can have a huge offensive year, you know, that's a testament to how good he is, because teams are going to be locking in on that guy.
Yeah, right now I'm saying, if I had to bet my life on one team missing it, I would have to say it's the Blazers, and I wouldn't be able to stake my life certainty on the Brooklyn Nets missing it, even though there's a temptation to go against any team Andrea Bargnani's on.
Okay, keeping it in the West. You mentioned it's a stacked conference. Mm-hmm. Which Western team gets left on the bubble? So who's going to be that 9 team, just looking out of the playoffs?
So I did my rankings as followed. I put this list together. I was like, okay, well, who do I like? San Antonio is a lock. Golden State is a lock. Houston is a lock. The Clippers are a lock. OKC is a lock. If they can stay healthy, OKC is a lock. Let's put it that way. And I'm going to assume that they will. Memphis is a lock. And to me, New Orleans is now a lock.
Oh, New Orleans, no question, man. I think New Orleans could scare some people. We can be talking about a potential like 4 seed team with them.
Well, they did get in the playoffs last year by winning their final game of the season.
No, so. But I'm banking on Davis better this year. They made a couple kind of subtle improvements. They've made a change behind the bench. I really like the Pelicans.
The change behind the bench, I think, is their biggest upgrade for the Pelicans this offseason. I think Alvin Gentry yeah. comes from championship winning team.
The biggest upgrade is apparently Anthony Davis is knocking down threes with regularity.
Yeah.
That's scary.
With regularity. Yeah, Anthony Davis can't be knocking down threes. That's not fair. We can't have that league. That's not fair. I didn't think they like really added to like much in the offseason New Orleans, but yeah, I think you're just banking on that the coaching changes is going to be really beneficial mm-hmm. for them, and that
who gets left out then?
So I think it's a mix of 3 teams that could be in it for that last spot.
For the 8 seed.
The 8 seed. And I think it's Dallas. Hmm. Don't count them out.
I don't see it.
I think it's Phoenix and our beloved Utah Jazz.
Oh, Utah. Now we're talking.
We're talking?
Yeah. Listen, I love the Jazz this year. Well, okay, I don't know if I love the Jazz this year. I love what they're doing in Utah. I love the roster that they're building. I'm so irrationally into Rudy Gobert this year. But, you know, Gordon Hayward looks good so far. Granted, just preseason. But they got some really nice pieces. Alec Burks coming back. Utah, I think, can make a fight for the playoff spot. So of those teams you mentioned, the guys looking out, I think Mavs have a real long shot of making it. Not a real long shot, but they have a tough road ahead for making it. Phoenix is a team that's, I think, is for sure looking out and not making it.
So you think the Jazz take that spot?
I hope the Jazz take that spot. But so I think Jazz or Mavs have the best chance. I'm pretty down on the Suns at the moment.
So
as much as I like the Tyson Chandler,
I would really like the Suns in that spot if it wasn't for all the Markieff Morris drama. If Markieff plays this season
and
he settles
down,
he's
their best player.
Well, I think that he and Bledsoe, yeah, are their 2 best players, no doubt about it. He's very good. He's very good. I don't see how the Jazz get in unless they just demolish their division. They're in the Northwest, where it's them, Nuggets, Timberwolves, Blazers, Thunder.
Listen, in all, like, the rational approach is that, yeah, you're totally right. Utah's not there yet. They're not in that playoff realm yet. The worst thing that could have happened, not the worst thing, but really they should have been a high lottery team last season. I think they really overshot expectations. And they're still probably a year, 2 years away from sniffing the playoffs, maybe even 3.
I think Trey Lyles are going to be a really good fit for them, though.
Yeah, he'll be a nice fit.
Like, that's a nice first-round pick.
I just mean, like, we should be thinking of them in the same sense that we think of some of the, like, total rebuild teams in the NBA.
I think they're a little further along their rebuild. I think they're closer. I think that Rudy Gobert
they're
is
just
a lot
really,
better.
They're really young is the thing.
They are young, but I think Rudy Gobert is good, and Gordon Hayward is really good. Mm-hmm. If they can get anything from Favors next year, and they can get an improvement
if that group of like Trey Burke, yeah. Exum, Favors is Exum's injured, I think, but Favors, Burks, Rodney Hood, yep. Like if one or two of those guys have take that next step forward to go alongside Gobert and Hayward, then the Jazz are scary. But yeah, I think the Suns are the team that are looking out. Yeah, you mentioned it might be the Morris thing that brings that on, but I just don't think they're quite there yet. You know, I'm not in love with the Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe backcourt.
Yeah, the Suns have a lot to prove. I think I believe in Jeff Hornacek. Again, it's a coaching thing where I really believe in Hornacek. I think he's a very good coach. I like the Suns, but without Morris, I think it'd be tough for them. So I would put right now, and this is crazy because like I think in your playoff rankings or whatever, Donovan Bennett was saying that he he thinks that Dallas is like for sure a team that falls out of the mix this year. And I think that they will be.
They still have talent. Dirk's still Dirk.
Dirk is still there.
Parsons is all right. Wes Matthews is good.
Parsons can be healthy. Wes Matthews was a nice addition if he can stay healthy. And Darren Williams is an upgrade at what they were doing at point guard. They did lose Monte Ellis, which hurts them big time. Mm-hmm. He was awesome for them last season, but I think they added a lot. I think that the DeAndre drama surrounding that team kind of took away a bit of the focus of some of the nice things that they added to their team in the offseason. I think that they'll still be in the mix.
Well, staying in the West once more, staying in this division, the Southwest is a meat grinder. Who wrote this question? Can all five teams make it in the Southwestern Conference?
Answer is yes. That's what I'm saying.
So the teams, teams, I'm pretty sure everyone knows, but it's New Orleans, Dallas, Houston, Memphis, and San Antonio.
Oh, what a ridiculous
that
division.
It's like the group of death.
Unbelievable. So yeah, I think the Mavericks, it's going to be tough for them, but I think they squeak in at that 8 spot.
So the question, can all five teams make it? I'll say no, because I think Dallas is going to be that 9.
So you think the Jazz are in then?
Yeah.
You're going to put the Jazz. Let's Dave Zarum putting the Jazz as the 8.
Let's do it. This is the
Emil Delich wearing a Utah Jazz hat as we speak.
This is the year. Yeah, our technical producer wearing the Jazz hat. So how can I say no? Okay, next question. Who will challenge Miami as the East's second best team? That's a good one. The assumption there is that the Cavs are the best team. Correct?
I mean, how could they not be?
Well, you know what? I like Miami a lot this year. I like their makeup. The one kind of red flag with that team is that they're all expiring contracts.
I think including they have like, Hassan Whiteside.
I think it's honestly, I think it's just Bosch and Dragic that are there locked up beyond this season.
Which so could be a good thing.
It could be good, but it's all you got a lot of guys playing in contract years, which could work out.
Could they steal KD?
But it could also be a situation where if it doesn't start off well for them, you know, they take another turn, they go another course. Can they steal KD? I don't know, man. That's nuts.
Hey, but I'm just saying, like, nobody talks about them.
Yeah.
Could you imagine after the LeBron decision that KD does a decision and goes down, takes his talents to South Beach?
Oh, I would hate to read the, like... The hot takes.
Oh, yeah. That would be so good. Anyway, though, they shouldn't be counted out in terms of Durant. Okay,
here's who I'm going to pick for who can challenge Miami. I think they are right now the clear favorites. I know you like Chicago. But, I think we're kind of sleeping on the Atlanta Hawks still.
I think people are sleeping on the Hawks, too. But you're right. I do
like they lost Carroll, which, you know, from a Raptors perspective, it's like, oh, we took their key player, their key glue guy. And he was really important to what they did. But think about it. I mean, that's Horford's team first, then Teague, then Millsap, or maybe you can flip Millsap and Teague. And Carroll was kind of that fourth guy. So they still have their main pieces there. They
also added Chago Splitter.
Yeah, Splitter's a solid center.
Added Tim Hardaway Jr. Get Thabo Sefolosha back from injury. Mm-hmm. And you hope that you can get continued solid play out of guys like Mike Scott and Ken Bazemore. I definitely think the Hawks are a good team. I think the Eastern Conference.
I don't know if Mike Scott's going to be playing in the NBA.
What? Mike Scott is playing in the NBA. You mean the office Mike Scott? He won't be, but this Mike Scott is certainly playing in the NBA.
Just Google it. The guy got arrested for drug charges and he took the rap.
Oh, that's right. His brother.
Yeah.
He did do that.
He was a promising player for the Hawks.
Yeah, he took the rap. He said all the drugs were his in the car. I forgot about that. Thanks for that reminder.
Good bro.
So that's why the Hawks won't be the number two team in the East this season. Mike Scott being a good brother and a bad brother, but, all so the same.
Chicago and Atlanta, are there any other contenders for that?
Washington.
For the number two?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What? Washington they would have beat the Hawks last year in the playoffs. I know they played for the injury to Wall. Think
those bigs are another year older. And outside of Wall, and I suppose Beal.
Wall and Beal is the best 1-2 punch in the Eastern Conference outside of LeBron Love.
I think you're banking on a lot of continued success from Nene and Gortat and that combo. I mean, they got to wilt.
But that's the thing too. Is that Gortat is a great pick and roll player, and John Wall loves to play the pick and roll.
So it's add Washington.
And Otto Porter, if Otto Porter, let's put it this way, if Otto Porter is the player that we saw in that Raptors series,
no way.
No way.
That was like, I don't know what happened, Paul Pierce voodoo magic or something with Otto Porter.
I don't know. Otto Porter's still young. Like, he was a top five pick. Like, it's kind of hard to just write him off as no.
That's
no, he can't do anything. Like, I just, call me crazy, but I think Washington could definitely be a threat to be that number two seed. But I'm still going to go with Chicago. Like, you got a front court with Pau Gasol, Mirotic, Noah, another year of McDermott, and then you drafted Bobby Portis. Oh, Jimmy Butler is still there. Still awesome.
Still their best player.
Derrick Rose, not fully healthy. By the way, when I said their front court, I didn't even include Taj Gibson, which is insane. That's their, like, sixth forward. Like, oh, what would the Raptors do for Taj Gibson?
Yeah, no, that's a scary team. I mean, the Rose-Butler stuff is a little concerning.
And you and I are happy they both kept Dunleavy. In terms of, like, yeah, them staying competitive, we both really appreciate what
he does. He's out for a
while
with a back injury, but he's a big part of what they do.
Big cog. So, yeah, I'm going to say Bulls still number two. Bulls stay number two. I'll slot the Hawks in three, and then the Wizards as a sneaky, sneaky four seed.
Yes. Okay, so let's move on. Who do you think is going to be the rookie of the year in 2015-2016? This one, again, some of these questions, I'm not sure why we're asking them because the answer seems so obvious.
Sure, let me just find what your answer to this question was because I loved the way that you phrased it. Okay, who will win rookie of the year? Zerum. Emmanuel Mudiay, no question.
No
period.
Question.
No question.
Debate over.
It's
okay,
over.
Moving on.
That's it. He's got it.
You have a better one than that?
I do. His name is Jahlil Okafor.
Okafor.
Jahlil Okafor is going to get so many touches, and the guy is so polished offensively. He's going to score. He's going to score over 15 points a game. And here's the thing, too, is it's tough for rookie point guard to come in the league like Mudiay and play in the Western Conference.
It is when he's asked to like really run an offense, and I think they're just going to let him run free. Kind of like Lillard year one.
Lillard could shoot.
He's the number one scoring option on that team. Yeah, but Mudiay is like an elite athletic get to the basket point guard. Like he truly is.
Sure, but guys are going to gap him. I just think that's going to take a little bit for him to adjust to the NBA, even though he was pretty solid in what we did see from him before he got injured playing in China. Like I said, I like Okafor. I just think that he's also going to get a ton of minutes. He's going to be beside another big that isn't going to eat up a ton of offensive possessions. They're going to look for him a lot. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the focal point of their offense. I like Okafor to get it done. I got to bring up one more answer here. Actually, two more quick ones. One is Evan Rosser, just Justice Winslow. There's nothing else. That's a hot take, Evan Rosser. Like, Justice Winslow
it's called a contrarian take.
That's the contrarian's contrarian take. But then even further, Anthony Bennett writes, my heart wants to say DJ Norman Bennett. Powell.
Donovan Bennett.
Good Lord.
Okay, sorry. Who did he say?
Donovan Bennett.
Yeah.
Picked Norman Powell at first. I almost passed out. I almost fell out of my chair. Yeah. My heart wants to say Norman Powell. Oh, my God. He switched it to D'Angelo Russell. Okay. He did. But even to consider Norman Powell at this point.
That's like wishful thinking.
It's almost like he and Rosser were like, Rosser was like Justice Winslow. And he was like, ooh, it was like a rap battle. And then Donovan came in and was just like, what do you think about Norman Powell? And then you came in and were like, Kristaps Porzingis. And then it was over.
No, not this year for Chris, for old Kristaps.
Oh.
But yeah, I mean, my rationale for Mudiay is the same as yours for Okafor, which is, you know, rookie of the year, it's a stats-driven one, especially, you know, if you're a good scorer, you're going to get a ton of votes. And those are, I think, going to be the 1-2 in points per game amongst rookies just because of their situation. They're on total rebuilding teams where they're just going to get every opportunity to have the offense ran through them. So yeah, I think those are both good guesses. Okay.
Certainly better than Justice Winslow and Norman Powell.
Last year's rookie of the year, Andrew Wiggins, entering year two. What are your realistic expectations for Andrew Wiggins this season?
Oh my God, I hate all these questions are back to back because I got to go back to the ripping Donovan Bennett board. I got to go back here.
Well, he had a great answer.
He did. He really did. Donovan Bennett's answer to this question right away. What are expectations for him this season? All-star invitation.
Bam.
Boom.
Booyah.
Boom.
Jim. We got to get like a Jim Cramer drop if anyone remembers the Booyah of course. Era.
Okay, I like Andrew Wiggins. All of Canada wants him to be in Toronto for the All-Star game this season, but he's just going to be there for the dunk competition and the rookie sophomore game.
I don't even know about the dunk competition.
Yeah, you just think that Zach LaVine's so good at it that he knows it, that he just doesn't want to get embarrassed.
It's going to be like a LeBron thing. Like, what do I have to gain?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to agree with that. I'm going to say that that's at least in play, but I think that he just does it because he loves Toronto so much, he's going to do it.
Okay, that's going to be fun. If that happens, that's going to be cool.
I think he's going to take a pretty minor step forward. Like he was the thing, and this was
I like Battle's
answer. Battle's answer. I was just going to say, Craig Battle.
You want to just read that out?
Yeah, read it out.
No, you go ahead.
I go ahead. I read Craig Battle's answer. So basically, I'll say this much. As I'm looking for it, most of Battle's argument is the fact that it's all about the three-point shooting for Andrew Wiggins. That this guy had a great January from behind the three-point line. I think, hold on, where is it there? There it is. He basically, he shot a little over 34% from deep in January. I think that's right. Yep. I got it here. Yep. So he shot over 34%. But if you look at his January splits, that would be the ideal kind of situation for Andrew Wiggins. And I've got him right here as his split. So he shot 47% from the field. He shot 34% from three, almost 80% from the free throw line, 5 rebounds a game, 3 assists a game, a steal and a half, and then 20 points. If he could have that, those are nice numbers. If Wiggins can have that season, that's a massive success. Like I said, his season, he had 17 a game, 2 assists, and his PER was almost 14.
Yeah, no, he had a great rookie year.
It's really, it's just a matter of, and he actually improved down the stretch in terms of just about every facet. Like, January was his best month from deep, but every other month that he played post All-Star break, he was a lot better in terms of everything but his three-point shooting percentage. So, yeah, it's like, if Andrew Wiggins can shoot even 30% from deep, you're going to see an uptick in all of his numbers, and his ability to get to the basket is going to be a lot better too.
If I'm Andrew Wiggins this season, my goal is to get all defensive second team votes. You know what I mean? I think that's where I want to start establishing myself this season. He's definitely got the skills to do it. Okay, let's zoom through these. We just got a few more. So the NBA's two most lucrative franchises has always been the New York Knicks and the Los Angeles Lakers, for obvious reasons. Look at those markets. But you can argue that there's no two teams in worse shape right now than the Lakers and the Knicks. What do you expect from the NBA's marquee franchises this season?
Get the hot take alert button ready.
Oh, no.
I don't think the Knicks are that crazy bad.
That is a hot take. I don't know if it's a hot take or just like stupid.
Okay, so maybe a little bit of both. So I'm looking at their roster because I'm looking at stuff. And I'm looking at their offseason. I'm like, added Robin Lopez, like him. Added Kylo Quinn, like him. Drafted Jerian Grant, really like him.
None of these are guys who are going to help you win this.
Got Aaron Aflalo, really like him. Yeah. You don't think Robin Lopez, Kylo Quinn, and Aaron Aflalo help you win this season? They certainly do.
Not like marginally. I don't think.
Liked Klay Anthony early in the draft last season. He gets another year. Jose Calderon is healthy. Langston Galloway was semi-decent last year.
Here's my thing with the Knicks. Yeah, you're listing improved players, but I think you have such a crappy foundation to build upon that, yes, it's way better than last year, but it's still not good enough. What about the Lakers?
The Lakers are crap. Anytime you sign Meta World Peace, like a couple weeks before the season starts, that's not like a good sign. Like if the Raptors signed Meta tomorrow, wouldn't everyone be like, what the hell is happening? It would be a panic button. I don't believe Kobe can stay healthy all season. I think D'Angelo Russell's learning curve is going to be a little bit steeper than some people expect.
We talked about it on our draft special back then. This guy needs to convince me. I'm not a huge Russell guy going into the season.
And there's just like, where's he going to get the opportunity? Where's he going to get the touches?
That roster's a mess. I mean, the backcourt is just so overcrowded with Russell. You need to play Jordan Clarkson because he might be your best player.
That's what I mean. There's Clarkson, Kobe, and Swaggy all stealing touches from...
You're missing one. Lou Williams.
Right.
How can you not? Like, they pay him big money.
I'm sorry, Lou. That's a bad miss. See, that's what I mean. Like, where is he going to touch the ball? And when he takes his shots, it's going to be like, remember how when we had Stauskas in here last week and we talked about how, you know, it'd be kind of tough sometimes for him just to feel confident in his shot because there were other options on the team and you feel like that added pressure every time you decide to take a shot.
It means you're taking a shot away from someone.
Exactly. And that's what you're going to see from Russell a little bit.
Oh, from Russell. Okay. I was going to say, I don't think Lou Williams is too concerned about that.
I think he'll be cool with it.
Okay. Next question. Which star player is going to be traded this season? There's one obvious answer here. Although I think it's...
I just don't want to say Carmelo because it totally contradicts everything I just said about the Knicks.
I think his contract is going to be really tough to get him out of that.
Yeah, I think so too.
No team wants any part of that contract.
I'm going to say... Boogie.
That's the obvious one I had in mind because there's friction there, and because if they go through another losing year with him as his best player, at some point you need to give
again,
up.
Again, referencing Stauskas, he's saying like how much turnover has that guy had there?
Exactly.
He's getting frustrated. You seen that video of him in practice?
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. That's an angry dude.
So I'll go with Boogie as well. I think I went with Derrick Rose in the piece.
You did. That was a hot take too.
So I mean, but I wouldn't rule that out either. Again, if these teams go in the wrong direction, changes happen. Rose is on an expiring deal. Last one. There's been a lot of aesthetic changes in the NBA this offseason. Heading into this year, whose new logo or jersey do you like the most and whose do you like the least? This you can also include court design.
So I'm going to say this. This might be the toughest decision out of every single question you ask because I like Philadelphia and Milwaukee's jersey changes so much.
Me too.
That if I was just a new fan coming into the league and that's how I was basing my decision, I like the Bucks. That's where I'm going to go. I'm just going to lock it in. I'm going to say I just like their color scheme a little bit better.
They kept it clean.
It's clean. It's new. But it's modern. It's really cool. It reminds me kind of that short 30 for 30. Who's the artist that made the love statue down in New York? He made the court for Miami. For the Bucks.
I don't know.
Yeah, it reminded me of that, like being modern but sleek.
The Bucks changed their court too. They also are becoming the first team with an alternate court.
Yeah. They're ahead of the game in the court game.
Granted, the court, at least the first one. No, both of them are pretty ugly.
So. Worst is the Clippers, hands down. Donovan Bennett, another horrible take in his article.
Most intriguing is the Atlanta Hawks, because if you haven't seen those, go to Google it or check out this NBA Roundtable on sportsnet.ca. I mean, those Hawks jerseys are either brilliant or a disaster.
I want to see them in person, right? Because you and I were both the same page with the Raptors jerseys. We weren't really sure about them. We saw them in person. We liked them a lot more. So I feel that same way with the Hawks stuff.
Okay, well, listen, I hope, JD, I hope you're a little more clear on some of these burning questions now that we've answered them. I hope you have a better outlook on the 2015-16 NBA season.
I got to kind of weirdly cheer for the Knicks now.
Yeah, you really kind of went behind them. I'll never understand that, but that's usually how I feel.
Aaron Aflalo.
Yeah.
If Kendrick Lamar writes a song about you, I like you. Huh. That's
didn't
the
you write a song
it.
About DeRozan? Or you name dropped DeRozan?
Maybe.
Maybe it was Aflalo and DeRozan was...
Aflalo definitely. Black Boy Fly. That's his song.
All right, well, listen, it's time now. Enough of this NBA crap. Well, crap's too strong. I love the NBA. But it's time to talk to DDP because he's calling in right now. A quick caveat before we get to the Diamond Dallas Page interview is that, you know, I thought, you know, it's a pretty natural idea. You know, I love to, we love to talk about the songs we use on our transitions and our breaks and whatnot, you know. We pride ourselves on having great music on this show. But so heading into the Diamond Dallas Page interview, I thought it only makes sense that we would play his entrance music, right? All the wrestlers have entrance music.
So, I can't remember what his was.
Well, I couldn't either until I looked it up.
This is incredible.
What's incredible is that nobody got sued for this. Okay, anyways, Diamond Dallas Page is coming
though.
Up. What?
That wrestlers, like, back in the day, they used to just, like, totally griff songs. Like, we've talked about this with NWO before, where it's like wrestlers would griff songs from artists and they would change it just, like, a tiny little bit.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This was, like, 1997. I'm not kidding.
This is awful.
Anyways, this is awful. Our conversation with Diamond Dallas Page will not be. Check this out.
Hey, this is Terrence Ross, and you're listening to Free Association.
Good call. All right, this is Free Association. Pumped right now to have on the line former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, DDP, Diamond Dallas Page. A true legend. How you doing, man?
Man, I am unstoppable. Unstoppable. We have so many things going right now. It's crazy.
We're going to get to all of it because you do have like a laundry list of things that you're involved with right now. You got the yoga, Jake the Snake documentary. We're going to get to all of it. But kicking it off, you know, the reason why we connected with you today was, you know, recently we had on our show, it's an NBA show. We had on Tracy Murray, 12-year NBA vet. And he was talking about kind of all the different wrestling events he used to go to with his teammates. And they were always kind of like crossing over into the wrestling world. And it got me thinking, like, there's always that connection between pro athletes and wrestlers. And you know, I think it's for obvious reasons. But even more so, there seems to be a connection between wrestlers, pro wrestlers, and NBA players. And I think it's because of kind of the whole larger-than-life persona thing, you know, physically and you know, metaphorically. I mean, do you see it like that?
Well, you know, I think a lot. I know for a fact that when you're a little kid and you're growing up, and these bigger than life action heroes are actually, you know, they're there, they're in the flesh, and you're watching on TV. Like, we were in your living rooms every Monday night for 3 hours, every Thursday night for 2 hours, then pay-per-views once a month for 3 hours, every Saturday and Sunday morning. So if you really watched, well, then you can't believe it when you come across us, which is really, you know, I've watched guys' eyes, and I know certain guys who didn't watch. And the guys who do, because their eyes get bigger. Like,
exactly,
oh,
exactly. And you see the same thing when people come across NBA players, like in the street or whatnot. It's that eyes widening, the jaws on the floor.
Yeah, and you know, it's a lot of the guys identify me. You're really all a lot of football players and a lot of basketball players. And the guys that really identified with me big time, like Herschel Walker was the first guy to ever do the diamond cutter in the end zone. Like before it was ever done by anybody besides me and the crowds, Herschel Walker, it was his one big run. And we weren't sure if he did it because he put the ball between his hands, did the bang, the whole deal. But, you know, Carl Malone coming down the court in game six, hits like a 20-footer and throws up the diamond cutter sign coming down court. You know, it was pretty cool stuff.
Man, I'm glad you brought up Carl Malone because that's one thing I got to ask about. So, you know, you guys had the big event at the Bash at the Beach in 98, and it was you, Malone, and Rodman. How does that type of thing come to be? Like, how did that come to the event?
That's a great question. Carl and I had become friends. I actually was at an autograph signing in Houston, Texas, and the Jazz were playing the Rockets, and Barkley was sick, not sick, but out with an injury. Drexler was injured. And so the Jazz are just stomping them. By the fourth quarter, Carl's on the bench with like 28 points. And in between timeout, I'm sitting about 20 rows up, and he sees me, and he makes the diamond cutter sign to me. And I'm with my photographer, his name is Ross.
You guys hadn't met? You guys hadn't met at that point?
Hadn't met yet. And So Ross is like, oh my God, Carl Malone just did a diamond cutter sign. And he's reaching into his bag to pull out his camera, right? And he goes, get him to do it again. I go, dude, I don't know him. He goes, well, he knows you.
Yeah.
So at the next intermission, you know, he was, you know, looking up again, and he saw me, and I made the diamond cutter sign. I pointed to the camera, and I sort of lifted my shoulders like, what do you think? And he threw it up again, and we got a picture. And then he sent his backstage passes.
Wow.
And as I was walking by, Barkley grabs me, because I know Charlie for a long time. And he pulls me in. DDP, he's got a beer in his hand. He has me a beer. Warren Moon's there with one of his kids. And I wish I had a YouTube, you know, like a camera.
Yeah, back then.
If you would have heard Barkley and Moon busting each other's chops. Who's the better athlete, the football player or the basketball player? It was hysterical.
Oh,
and then I finally got out and met Malone. You know, we became buddies, and then he invited me up to to the All-Star game when I was in New York, and I happened to be doing a toy fair. And we got even tighter, and then it was right at playoff time, and I knew Rodman was coming in for the second time. And
this
Dennis,
is to do the to do again. The to do the Hogan NWO angle,
right? Okay. The whole NWO thing. This is going to be number two.
Okay.
And I'd gotten to know him a little bit the first time, and you know, he was a huge fan. And what Dennis was really amazing at was being the heel, and he knew how to back off and, you know, act sneaky. I mean, he knew this stuff, you know. So he didn't have to be. And he's a crazy great athlete. So I knew he was coming in, and I think right then they were up 2-0. The Jazz was over LA, and no, 3-0. They were up 3-0. I think it was 3-0. So I think they swept them that year. I'm almost positive they might have won 1, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
And I went down to see Eric Bischoff, and I said, you know, dude, I got this idea. And I called Carl beforehand and asked him, you know, what he thought of it, because I knew he loved the business, you know. And I was like, what do you think? I said, do you have any problems with Rodman? And he told me that when his rookie year, remember, I had met all the rookies, they had to go to summer camp, right? And they had to, like, live with each other. They put, like, two guys in a room and stuff. Mm-hmm. Dennis Rodman was his roommate.
That's the odd couple, man.
He, Yeah, right, right. And he said, I don't, you know, I always liked Dennis. I don't know this guy wearing the wedding dresses. He said, but, you know, but I always liked him. I thought he was a good enough guy. And I said, well, I got this idea about me and you against Rodman and Hogan. So I brought it to Bischoff, and he thought about it. He goes, you know, like, give me a little time with that. And then he watched game four. I think it was game four, whatever it was, the Jazz. I mean, he just manhandled Shaq, which, you know, not many people ever did that.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, they swept him. So Bischoff called me up. He said, let's make the deal. I called Carl up, and we were out in the jet to his place the next day. We cut the contract, and Carl worked out a lot in the ring.
No kidding.
He wanted to learn how to do the stuff where, you know, Dennis is not the greatest practice guy.
Okay.
he don't really want to practice. Yeah. So, you know, there was times out there where I had to just take him and stuff. And to be perfectly honest, I was one of the strongest guys I have ever. And I think anybody in the NBA will say the same thing. I mean, for being, you know, 6'6", maybe 6'7", closer to 6'6", or even maybe 6'5", I don't know. But Dennis Rodman was the strongest guy, pound for pound.
So wait, Rodman, you're saying, stronger than Malone?
Well, I'm talking about, guys, I didn't face Malone.
Yeah.
You know, and Malone was crazy, freaky strong.
Because he's just beast. That,
Rodman was like tendon strength.
Yeah.
I mean, he was always real skinny. He was never a big build. He had a good body, but he was never like a bigger build. Like Carl looked like a damn bodybuilder.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You know? Carl looked like a wrestler.
Well,
you
exactly.
know, 6'9" and just shredded, you know?
That's right, because when you watch that clip, which we did before the interview today, and you look at when Malone gets in the ring with Hogan, and it's not too many times that Hogan looks like the smaller dude. Like, he gets in there, and he's
right.
kind of towering over Hogan a little bit. But, yeah, it's interesting that you say that about Rodman, like the strength, because we were wondering about that. We wanted to know.
But you got to imagine, like being an undersized, because he was an undersized power forward, and to be doing that and grabbing, like, 16 rebounds a game or whatever the number was, I mean, you got to be had that crazy strength to move people around like that.
I mean, and he really did, too, because, you know, it wasn't like he was a crazy, you know, early on in his career, he could jump over the moon.
Yeah.
You know, but his career went on, you could see he was getting up there, but nothing that, like, he should have been able to grab 20 rebounds.
Exactly.
A game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The guy was, and I knew why as soon as I locked up with him.
That's wild.
And then when I was trying to put him in a position to do something, and he wasn't working with me. And that's when you really feel how strong somebody is.
Yeah.
You know, so I just had to take some sometimes.
you know, you mentioned Malone too, as obviously he's kind of like a, I call him like the kind of like the Paul Bunyan of the NBA, you know, the guy with these incredible feats of strength, stories around him. Were you guys working out at all or together? Or what was
Oh, yeah. It was not just in the ring, but, you know, we also hit the weight room and cardio, and we did everything. And he was crazy strong on the weights. I mean, you would never think a basketball player, you know, could move weight around like that, because it's not like he's a football player.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But he also stayed pretty limber, too, which is really important, you know.
And that's kind of like another like a shared trait with wrestling. I mean, you guys have to be strong and be, like you said, moving all that weight, but you got to be mobile as well. I mean, you're not stiffs.
Yeah, more than anything, you know, and a lot of the guys, they get really stiff, and that's how they get hurt. You know, one of the things that, you know, I'm sure we'll roll this into DDP yoga now. The whole thing with DDP yoga is staying supple, flexible. I mean, if you're over 35, really over 30 years old, you don't play basketball to stay in shape. You get in shape so you can play basketball.
Yeah.
Hey, tell us a little bit about DDP Studios. I know you got some new ones opening up, correct?
Well, I got one big DDP Yoga Performance Center is right down here in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's a $2.5 million complex. It's a our corporate offices, but we're also a production studio as well. We have 5 edit bays. We have a TriCaster, which means we can have our own television show. They're going to set up to 8 different cameras we can go off of. But we also built sound stages for the production studios, for the workouts, for cooking shows. We have a 30-foot green screen. I've got Stone Cold Steve Austin in here today. And he's doing he's doing his podcast with Jake and with Scott and with Scott Hall and myself. And we're also just shooting it, you know, to so he can see some, you know, some more ideas as he moves forward with it.
How limber is Stone Cold these days? How's he faring in the yoga? How's he faring on the mat?
No, first of all, it's DDP yoga. Don't call my stuff yoga, man. It ain't your mama's yoga. Okay? and I never developed this for yogis. I developed this for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. So think about that. You know, but Steve, he's actually, you know, he's still in pretty damn good shape, you know, considering he took the bad neck injury and everything. And we were working on some stuff yesterday. So, you know, for Steve, it's like anything. If you don't keep a repetition, if you don't stay consistent, well, you're gonna go right back to where you started. And if you're getting older, like, you know, he's close to 50, I'm close to 60. When I say close, I mean 9 months away, you know. You've got to stay ahead of it. And it becomes a more of a preventative maintenance constantly. And, you know, DDP yoga happened out of necessity.
I don't know if you follow the league today. I mean, who's a guy who you look at like a Malone and say, well, that guy could step in the ring and hold his own right away? Like, the obvious guy is LeBron.
Well, LeBron's a freak. You know, LeBron's a freak. And he looks like a football player. But when, you know, he would have obviously be like the number one choice just because of his size and his ability. And there was a time, like right in the beginning of his career, that he came rolling down the court. And I have a picture of him doing the diamond cutter sign after this sick slam that he freaking did. And so I'm guessing, I know that I was talking to Ric Flair, and he said that LeBron's a humongous fan. So I would believe that diamond cutter was, you know, he felt the bang.
That's too funny.
Yeah, like, because of who he is, I don't know if he'll ever do it. But it was funny because when Rodman did it the first time, you know, we've had a lot of football players come over, like a lot of guys who just took their careers over, you know, from Ernie Ladd on out. When Rodman did it, it was, oh, Joe, it's Rodman. Yeah, that's a freak show. You know, it's wrestling. When Malone did it, that, like, shook up the world. I mean, I remember Costas. Like, he was like, here's a guy who's worked with, you know, WWF. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the guy who's done stuff with wrestling. Was just like just mortified that Carl would be involved in professional wrestling. Like, you know, he grew up, it's like, you know, he never wanted to be a professional basketball player as a kid. He wanted to be a wrestler.
Yeah. And you can kind of see it. He took to it like a fish in water. Hey, JD, if you could pick a wrestler or an NBA player from today to be a wrestler, who'd you go with?
I mean, I feel like I would go with, if he's already retired, my boy Nate Robinson. I think he'd be like to. yeah. I think he'd be a Rey Mysterio Jr. type. I'd roll with him like that.
I could see like DeMarcus Cousins.
He's a freaky athlete, man. He'd be able to figure it out. I think he'd be able to learn some tricks.
That's a great
top rope guy.
DDP, man. Mention it real quick. The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. This documentary coming out. We just got a minute. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it was filmed in its entirety from day one when I went down to see Jake in Gainesville, Texas. And Jake was hooked on, you know, he was alcoholic, hooked on pills, crack, and cocaine. And pretty much went cold turkey off the cocaine and the crack, moved into my house. Over the period, you know, I'm just trying to help the guy who really mentored me. And he, you know, he would critique my matches. He did a lot for me. I always wanted to pay him back. And he was at his lowest of lows. I mean, he wasn't living in a crack house, but it was, you know, a level or so up from that. Yeah. And, you know, here's a guy who, you know, has made millions of dollars himself. And I just wanted to get in there, and because everyone saw the movie that was a wrestling fan, Beyond the Mat.
Yeah.
And they saw where Jake was at. I mean, he was doing crack in that movie.
It was pretty dark,
It was as dark could be. And, Jake was so ashamed. And that's the biggest thing I found about it, the whole shame factor. And getting him to stop telling him the story that he'd been telling himself. Like, we are the story we tell ourselves. And getting him to change his story. And the movie chronicles all of this. It is so emotional. It'll inspire you. The last 20 minutes will make you feel like you could run through a brick wall. And that's what the Resurrection of Jake the Snake is all about. Anybody who's listening and you want to see the movie, if you go to JakeTheSnakeMovie.com.
Well, listen, it's a really powerful story, obviously. And
really,
again,
I'm so excited to see it, man.
The Resurrection of Jake the Snake. I've just seen the trailer, and it's the trailer enough is moving, so I can only imagine when you put it to feature length what it's like. Also, obviously, DDP Yoga, not your mama's yoga, as the man himself said.
As I was told, very sternly.
anybody's listening, you want to check it out, go to ddpyoga.com. It's all there.
Perfect. All right, listen, thanks so much. Really appreciate you doing this, man. All the best.
Hey, guys. I appreciate it, man. You guys get paid.
A boy's born in hot time, Mississippi, surrounded by for one that ain't so pretty. His parents give him love and affection to keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city.
All right, good stuff from Diamond Dallas Page. Thank you for that. This has been a fun show, JD. Anything you want to tell the people about coming up on Brady and Walker this week?
I do want to say that I want to see more NBA players wrestling. Like, yeah. Legitimately wrestling.
All right, quickly on that DDP interview. First of all, the Charles Barkley stuff is great. You're injured, and then you're just back in the locker room slamming beers. It's like my exact image of the guy, so that's perfect.
I also like how... I was a little scared when I didn't call it DDP yoga.
Yeah.
Every time yoga. He's like very defensive about that. And even though he's like 1,000 miles away, I was like, shit, don't.
Yeah, you got a little intimidated. I saw your face.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so we talked about like which guy you'd want to see wrestle right now. But yeah, it would be really cool to see Russell Westbrook wrestle too. That's a good one.
Yeah,
like he'd be such a good top rope flyer. He'd be awesome.
One thing that blew me away from that though is the Dennis Rodman comment.
Yeah, the tendon strength.
Between Malone and Rodman and all the wrestlers that you've worked with your career, Rodman's the strongest guy you've ever been around?
Not
skinny Rodman?
Not that shocking, though, considering like what he was able to accomplish on the floor.
Exactly. But cool insight. I mean, yeah, that was random that we have a wrestler on our show, but I really enjoyed that. I always like kind of opening the old zeitgeist, you know, pop culture crossover with the NBA.
Oh, it was cool. It was fun. I was skeptical.
Few leagues cross over into pop culture as well as the NBA. So why not take advantage?
But I also really liked your point about wrestlers and NBA players kind of relating to one another as guys that just always stick out and have that kinship.
Yeah.
Kinship is a thing that I invented just now. And
they have that too.
It's good.
They have that. You can have this show on your iTunes. If you hit that subscribe button, you can have it automatically show up every Tuesday. Otherwise, you can check us out on sportsnet.ca. Make sure you tell your friends.
On At the Letters, the Sportsnet's baseball podcast, Ben and Arden preview the ALDS. Those Blue Jays, I hear, are in the playoffs. And they look back to the beginning of the season when they made their predictions.
We talked about earlier, make sure you keep an eye out for Sportsnet magazine. Huge Raptors preview issue coming out. Tons of good stuff in there. I can't recommend that enough.
Also, we do breaking news on the show. The Bills have reached out to Trent Richardson. So that's not good.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. That's all we need to. I don't think that there's any better way than to go than some Buffalo Bills news.
All right, you're listening to Free Association, and now you're not.
Yeah. Jumpin', them boys up to something. They just spent like 2 or 3 weeks out the country. Them boys up to something, they just not just bluffing. You don't have to call, I hear my dance like Usher. Ooh. I just found my tempo like on DJ Mustard. Ooh. I hit that Ginobili with my left hand all like, woo. Lobster and saline for all my babies that I miss. Chicken finger, french fry for them hoes that wanna dance. Jumpin', them boys up to something. I think I need some Robitussin. Way too many questions, you must think I trust you. You searching for answers, I do not know nothing, woo. I see him tweaking, ain't no something's coming, woo. Jumpin', them boys up to something.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.